Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Friday morning program. Today we're going to have a look at a problem that exists in New Zealand. It's about solving New Zealand's freshwater crisis. And it's an interview with a Dr. Mike Joy, some of you might know him, by Gunda Tenti and Stephen Robinson. Now, Dr. Mike Joy is a respected freshwater ecologist and environmental scientist, educator and campaigner in New Zealand. He is outspoken about the declining freshwater quality and ecosystems in this country. Dr. Joy is a senior researcher at the Institute for Governance and Policy Studies at Victoria University of Wellington. Gunda Tenti and Stephen Robinson are interviewers for Share International.
New Zealand is faced with a freshwater crisis that has developed over decades. The nation's water has deteriorated to an alarming extent as a result of changes in land and water use in agriculture, horticulture, forestry, urban development and other human activities, together with a lack of robust regulation, monitoring and enforcement. Many rivers are unsafe for swimming. 74% of freshwater fish are threatened with extinction and 90% of wetlands have been drained for farming and development. In the past two decades, the number of dairy cows in New Zealand has risen by 69% nationally to 6.5 million, and in some regions is up by 500%. The situation is being made worse by climate change and increasing droughts, which reduce river flows and intensify the pollution.
Despite years of scientifically researched data, evidence and reports, it appears only now that the call for action may lead to necessary changes. Currently, the New Zealand government is considering ways to improve the present management of freshwater. In September 2019, the government launched an action plan called Action for Healthy Waterways, released by Environment Minister David Parker and Agricultural Minister Damien O'Connor. This action plan aims to stop the degradation of our rivers and lakes, achieve a noticeable improvement in 5 years, and restore our waterways within a generation, says Dr. Joy, who was an appointed member of the Freshwater Science and Technical Advisory Group that worked closely with the government on the plan.
And the first question from the interviewers is, could you talk about why you decided to become an ecologist and environmental scientist? And Dr. Mike Joy's reply is, I went to university at the age of 33. I had been a taxi driver, truck driver and dairy farmer. I sailed across the Pacific and worked in Australia on sheep stations. When I started studying freshwaters, environmental science and ecology, I had some really inspirational lecturers. I began to realise how bad things were, what was happening to the planet. When I started doing my master's and postgraduate study in freshwater, in those few years, things were going backwards really fast. I could see this massive intensification of farming, increasing the number of animals grazing per acre of land by adding irrigation and fertilizer, and changes in urbanization having a huge effect on waterways. I have become an environmentalist mainly because of outrage.
Another question is, what is your view, what, in your view, are the most crucial changes needed to solve New Zealand's freshwater crisis? And he says that we have to reduce the intensity of farming. We have gone completely into industrial farming, which is very harmful to the environment, especially freshwaters. We could make big steps by reducing drastically the number of animals on the island, on the land, and diversifying farms to a mixture of farms, forestry and aquaculture within much smaller farms in order to reverse the harm that we have done. Changing farming systems completely so that they are along the lines of permaculture and regenerative farming, which means regenerative practices are essentially enhanced organic and permaculture productions and methods that excludes pesticides, GMO seeds, and factory farm techniques. Regenerative practices focus on improving soil health, water retention and rainfall conservation, and on using crop rotation, agroforestry and plant rotational grazing with the intentions of sequestering excess carbon from the atmosphere. To all that, to get all the industrial fossil fuels and the fossil fuel-based synthetic fertilizers out of our food systems, we have to do this very quickly.
And what are the main pollutants? And Dr. Joy's reply, the really big ones are nutrients, mostly nitrate and sediment, through bad land management, farming and forestry in the wrong places. Keeping the soil on the land is crucially important. Looking after the soil, getting soil health back again, getting animals off the land so we stop compacting the soils. Nitrogen comes mostly initially from artificial fertilizer. Basically, what we are doing at the moment is making milk out of fossil fuels.
Another question, could you explain more about toxins? And he says that we put nitrogen on the farm to grow grass. The cows eat the grass and most of the nitrogen goes out in the urine. The Canterbury regions on the South Island is a good example. With light permeable soils, the urine, which is mostly nitrogen, goes through into the groundwater. The groundwater is connected to the rivers, so nitrogen and urine go into groundwater, and nearly everybody in Canterbury drinks groundwater. Nitrate levels have gone up now to the point where many, if not most, of the people in rural Canterbury have a much increased risk of colorectal cancer. Evidence from studies show that nitrates and cancer are linked in New Zealand. We have the highest rates of colorectal cancer in the world, and the highest is New Zealand are in Canterbury.
Another problem relates to antibiotic-resistant bacteria, as so many antibiotics are now being used in animal agriculture. Strains resistant to antibiotics are being found in large numbers in waterways near intensively farmed areas, which has side effects on human health. Considering the ecosystem's health, those nitrates, in the same way as they grow grass and paddocks, also grow algae in streams, lakes, estuaries and the ocean. The effect is too much algae growth that starts to cause fluctuations in oxygen levels, which can lead to not toxic lethal effects from nitrogen, but secondary lethal effects because there is no oxygen for the life to breathe. That's when it starts to impact the environment, with the direct impact on habitat from sediment, filling in all the spaces between the stones and rocks where most of the life lives. These interstitial spaces between rocks and boulders and streams are crucial habitats. So when fine sediment fills in these spaces, the habitat is lost. So there are both human health and ecosystem health issues. It's never one or the other.
Right, another question. How can we move government and business towards responsible action and environmental change. Well, the governments will just maximize their chances of getting voted in, and businesses will maximize their profit until we stop them. A current example, a figure quoted often by this government, is 80% of New Zealanders think that fresh water is our biggest environmental issue. So they, the government, are proposing major changes to freshwater protection. That's how governments make a difference, but only when we make them make a difference. It's the same with business. At the moment, we are subsidizing business to harm the environment. Examples from the dairy industry are two lakes in New Zealand, which are tourist icons, Lake Taupo and Lake Rotorua. The farmers there are being paid millions of dollars per farm to not farm near the water in order to protect those farms, or those lakes, rather. But they, the farmers, are not paying for the harm they do to the environment. That's being left to the current and future generations. Now we have contaminated water and have to find alternative water supplies for hundreds of thousands of people.
And the next question, what kinds of action have you been involved in trying to convince government, local, regional, national, to change its ways? Primarily, making everything as public as possible, writing scientific articles, opinion pieces in newspapers, social media, every way I can to get the public motivated. I also have been an expert witness on many plan changes around water quality and consent applications to pollute rivers. I'm currently on working groups with the Ministry for the Environment on these proposed changes and have written probably close to 100 technical reports for councils and central government regarding how to implement changes. The next question, what particular achievements have you seen regarding changing government's environmental policies for the better? We are hoping for an achievement, the promise by New Zealand's Environment Minister David Parker that he will do something to clean up fresh water in this country. He has set up all these working groups I have been a part of. We have now given him our advice. There is a submissions process and then hopefully early in 2020, I guess that will be a bit later in 2020 now, he is going to come out with the new policies, and that's the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management.
Right, another one. What role has people power played, and what role is it play in achieving these environmental policy changes? And he says that people power was all the advocacy work from people like Clean Water campaigner Marnie Prickett and non-governmental organisation including Choose Clean Water, which is a student-led group campaigning for strong freshwater policy, and also Forest and Bird highlighting the issue of freshwater. People have expressed clearly in the polls their concern for freshwater. I have done hundreds of talks, hosted panel events, television and radio programs, podcasts to raise public understanding and increase public pressure on the government. And so one more question. Looking at the bigger picture of global climate change, a recent report stated that a global response on the scale of World War II emergency mobilization is needed. What are your thoughts on this? Well, to seriously change, I agree the scale and commitment would need to be similar to end the damaging things we do and concentrate on fixing the problems. In our current economic system, every dollar of gross domestic product, or GDP, is linked to fossil fuel energy. And of course, emissions, fossil fuel and use and GDP are all locked together. It is just an indication of how extreme the changes need to be for us to have a hope of surviving. At least 30,000 scientists signed up to the Warning to Humanity document published in 1992. Climate change is just one symptom of limits to growth. It is great to see young people taking action now, but all of us, everybody on the planet, will need to change. Mother Earth is letting us know. What is needed is a complete reversal of the current system.
And what's with the current global crisis we're going through with the virus, I guess that particular statement is especially pertinent right now.
Right.
Now we're going on to a question and an answer given by Benjamin Krem. This was also published in the April 2020 issue of Share International magazine. And the question is, how can all teachings lead to the New Age Messiah when Jesus said that faith in him as God is the only one for salvation? And the reply, I'm not sure that Jesus actually said that. He said in John 14-6, I am the way, the truth, and the light. No one comes to the Father except through me. Maitreya is an embodiment of the Christ principle, overshadowing the disciple Jesus, now the Master Jesus. That Christ principle was then manifested through Jesus. So, when Jesus said that, it is Maitreya who is saying it through Jesus. What we call the Christ principle is an energy of love, an energy of consciousness per se, which is awakened in the heart chakra, the center at the right-hand side of the chest. The Christian Bible says, the wise man's heart is on the right side, the foolish man's heart is on the left. On the right side of the chest, you have the spiritual heart center, the seat of the soul in the human body. It's not in the dense physical, it's in the etheric physical, which is subtle physical. The dense physical is a precipitation downwards from the etheric. The etheric body is laid down in the womb before it becomes a dense physical manifestation.
When what we call the Christ principle is awakened as a little seed of consciousness, a tiny flame at the right side of the chest in that chakra, then you become a wise person. You become the one who knows that the Christ principle dwells within, and when you respond to the Christ principle whenever you come upon it. When that energy is awakened, you can respond to a greater degree with a greater purpose to that energy. There's a quotation here, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Which means except through the manifestation of the Christ principle in the heart on the right-hand side of the chest. When the Christ principle is awakened there, you are reoriented to the spiritual life in whatever department of that life is served. Does this mean you become religious? Not necessarily. The religious path is only one path among many paths to God. They all lead in the end to the same thing, to one God. There is only one divinity, one God. You are it. We are it. And in fact, there isn't anything else but God. That's all there is.
We think that this physical body is something real. It's not. It's relatively real. It's a vehicle for that divinity, but we all share that divinity. There is only one divinity. That's why Maitreya says, do not try to worship me. If you worship me, you are trying to lower yourself. I do not want this. I want you to be equal. You are a spark of the Supreme Being. Do not think you are below me. There's only one level, and that's what the divinity is. And the only difference between ourselves and the masters is that they can demonstrate that divinity. We go through the process of evolution whereby that divinity becomes more and more able to express itself through the physical plane body. So, every life and evolution, you can backslide, but you're going forward all the time. Every incarnation allows you the capacity to demonstrate more and more of that divinity until you are what Maitreya would call self-realized. He has said, I've not come to found a new religion, but to help you continue to evolve the framework of whatever tradition it is. If you're Christian, be the best Christian. If you're Hindu, be the best Hindu, and so on. And he says, I have come to teach humanity the art of self-realization. That's what we're here for, to achieve self or God realization. And he says, the self alone matters. And back to that quote, no one comes to the Father except through me. No one can realize their own divinity, become self-realized or God-realized, that's what coming to the Father is, except through the Christ principle, being awakened in the human heart. And that's what Jesus meant. Thanks for listening. Love and blessings to you all.